So I'm going to attempt to do an introduction. I am awful at introductions, so let's see if I can do this one right. Hey everyone, it's Adam from the Pine Barrens Institute, and this is episode 8 of Cryptids and Conversations. And today, our special guest we are chatting with is Nash Hoover, researcher, investigator, filmmaker, and host of the show Chasing Legends. Hey man, how's it going?
Good, how are yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. You're calling from Minnesota, right?
Yep, South Central.
So we're just jumping right into this. I have no script. I have no outline. I pretty much just flow with it, and whatever comes up, comes up.
Just winging it.
Exactly. I find that works best. So you said you're in the middle of nowhere, really. Are you more on up in the north or in the south, west of Minnesota? Where are you coming from?
Yeah, I live about 45 minutes southish, or straight south of the Twin Cities.
Okay. I know, like, nothing about Minnesota, which is surprising because we're right next to it. But I keep my stuff pretty stateside. What in Minnesota, or is there anything specific that got you into, like, wanting to be a researcher or investigator or anything like that into this, you know, Fortean weird community that is going on?
Well, it was really nothing that kind of got me into this stuff. I started researching this stuff when I was in elementary school, and it kind of all started with the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot and UFOs, and then it just kind of spiraled from there.
Did you watch any, like, TV shows, Unsolved Mysteries or anything like that?
Yeah, I watched Monster Quest a lot when that was on, and then, like, when I got into high school and stuff, like, Destination Truth was around, so I watched that a lot, and those were kind of the two main ones for me.
Well, I love Destination Truth. I really wish they'd bring that back instead of, even though I like Expedition Unknown, I loved Destination Truth.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. It's one of the, you know, main inspirations behind, you know, my show Chasing Legends. I'm actually, I've met a few of the guys, and me and Rex Williams, who was the medic for seasons 3 and a half of 4, are actually pretty good friends, and I actually have tickets to go see Josh Gates speak in Milwaukee in January.
Oh, nice. For Destination Truth, they kind of like went real broad, what they researched, what they looked into. It ranged anywhere from ghosts to monsters to shipwrecks, treasure, all that. Are you kind of the same? And for Chasing Legends, do you keep it pretty broad? Do you like to stay mostly to, like, ghosts, monsters, anything like that? Or is it just kind of all over the board?
To a point, when we first started out, it was kind of, we pretty much investigated whatever we could really get our hands on. So we were doing, you know, a decent amount of ghost cases as well as, you know, cryptid cases. But as we've kind of evolved as a show and as a group, we've more shifted our focus towards cryptid specifically. And we will dabble in, like, hauntings and stuff if it fits a list of criteria that we've made.
If you do investigate a haunting, do you do it, what's your setup? Because most people, when they see, like, investigations of ghosts or haunted places, they're taking it from, like, Travel Channel shows, reality shows, where it's just really overdone and scripted, and it's just really fake. What do you do differently when you're looking at a haunting?
Well, really, we've steered pretty fast away from, like, traditional hauntings, so we don't do, like buildings and stuff. Like, we won't do private residences, and we don't do, you know, the typical ramifications that would classify as, like, a haunted location. We're not one to, you know, to sit and pretty much talk to the walls all night. We do a lot of, like, cemeteries. We do a lot of, you know, abandoned structures in the middle of nowhere. We do, you know, it's haunted forests and stuff that's kind of out there that can still add a level of danger to it, you know. And we, like you said, you know, we really don't overdo it. We go about it with as much, you know, care and concern as we would with anything else. We really strongly research everything, and we make sure that we get all the info out there, and we put a lot of the reports to the test ourselves, and we just, you know, we investigate, and we, you know, if nothing happens, we don't, you know, create things to happen. We, you know, put out our findings. We We don't do investigations to try and prove anything or really actually like find anything. It's more of to put these reports to the test, and if we happen to have similar experiences, then awesome.
Right. I like that. I like that approach. Now, as a filmmaker and an investigator, it probably irritates you as much as it does me when you see other people doing investigations and they claim to get like a piece of evidence caught on film or a sound, but underneath that, when they play back the sound, they have an underscore playing as well, so you can't hear
Oh
everything.
my God, it's awful. It's
It
awful.
drives me nuts. And it's like they have the text box
It's
up here on
it's
screen.
we yeah, we don't incorporate we don't put music into our investigations. We put music into our episodes, but where it makes sense. We don't try to add any kind of spooky underscore to when we're doing our investigations. It takes away from what it is. And yeah, we want people to be able to hear what we're hearing. And that's, what's one of the reasons why we investigate, and the cameras that we shoot our night stuff on, we have pretty high sensitivity microphones on there, so you really can hear a lot, and we don't want to take away from that. We want, like I said, we want everybody to be able to hear what we're hearing and be able to kind of lend their own explanations. And
Right. Make keep
yeah,
it keep it
it's
as authentic as possible.
yeah.
So when you go out looking for this stuff, what are you looking to do? To prove that it exists, to just kind of authenticate the legend, to catch something?
We more so, we it's we find an interesting story, and we research as much as we can about it. We reach out to people that know a lot about it, and we pretty much put together a nice little package that we can, make into an episode. And we go about the cultural and the historical, sides of things, and look into, the scientific element of things. And we more so it's yeah we you know we try to see if we can have our own encounters, and try to see if we can replicate people's encounters to see if there's other explanations that, could be happening. If it's a misidentification, if it was, just a random occurrence, a natural phenomena. We try to work out everything and see what we can find. And if we aren't able to have any similar explanation, encounters of our own while trying those approaches, then we start looking into, okay, maybe it could be an actual flesh and blood animal. It could be, actually a haunting, But yeah, we pretty much just like to check all the boxes before we will consider, if anything is real or made up.
Right.
We just It's better for us to, in terms of peace of mind, and to just make sure that we are looking, we're exploring every possible avenue that could go into what people could be seeing, and try to replicate it or have our own, see if we can just have it happen on its own.
Nice. Have you ever like focused in on one particular legend where you're like, I love this legend. We need to check it out. This is one of the ones that ranks as pure truth to me. This has got to be real. But then you look into it and you're just like, no, this is crap. There is no way this is real. My opinion on it has completely changed.
Not necessarily any, I don't think it's an, I haven't had anything really like that where it's anything we've actually like looked for. I have had ones like that though that I was interested in and potentially doing something on. And as I've, dived more deeper into it, kind of started finding things like, okay, maybe this might not be the best, option. We had that problem with the Ireland episode, where we thought it was gonna be this big deal thing. And as we started investigating more to start lining up interviews and stuff like that, we started finding out that it's, most Irish, cryptids are more leaning towards folkloric than anything that could actually physically exist. So that was a challenge for us, and we, did the best we could. But yeah, I would say there's, things that I personally have, been really interested in looking for that really on paper looked good, looked deeper into things, but nothing that we've really done episodes on. I know our Devil's Punch Bowl one, we really didn't have any expectations for it. We just thought it was kind of a crazy story, and decided to jump at it, and it turned out to be a pretty interesting adventure.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Devil's Punch Bowl investigation because anything with where gnomes are involved, I always think is pretty entertaining because it doesn't matter like what kind of legend like they're talking about, at least one quote unquote eyewitness of said gnomes will always describe them as the classic. It's wearing a pointed hat. It's wearing like a little vest.
Yep.
it's just like, I really don't think that actual gnomes would be rocking a nice red pointed hat. Like, that's just my take on it.
They pretty much describe the Keebler elves.
Exactly. Or like David the Gnome from that old Nickelodeon show.
It's like, or they just, you know, it's like, oh, look, it looked like a garden gnome. Like, okay, that's probably what you saw then. It was a garden gnome.
Right. You probably passed by a garden gnome real quick that someone had out in their property. Now, another aspect to that that Devil's Punch Bowl legend is that if you take water from the actual runoff, that it stays cold for what? It's supposed to stay cold forever?
That's pretty much everything was saying was, you know, it doesn't change its temperature or clarity. And we took a sample of it. It changed. I completely spaced and forgot to include that bit at the end of our episode that it, you know, it did change temperature and clarity. But yeah, that's one of the main legends that you pretty much find everywhere when you research the Devil's Punch Bowl is that the, you know, this water, you know, deal. But yeah, we kind of, you know, we did some research online and looked into, you know, potential, you know, is it, you know, could it be like a, you know, like a mineral substance in the water that, you know, keeps it clear and cold, but we really couldn't pinpoint any specific answer that could, you know, lead to any truth of this.
Do you kind of want to update everyone? Where exactly is the Devil's Punch Bowl located?
So the Devil's Punch Bowl is, I believe it's southwest of Menominee, Wisconsin. It's kind of off the beaten path. You kind of have to take this little road and find it. But there's signs and stuff for it. And it's just a giant bowl that's carved into the rock, you know, the limestone in this area. And it's, you know, it's, there's a waterfall that flows down it, and it just kind of carves through, and then it connects to a nearby river. But yeah, when we looked at pictures of it online, we're like, okay, this will be cool. And then we got there, and it was like huge. Like it's way bigger in person than it does, you know, looks in person. But it's a totally cool location. Like, I'd love to go back again and just, you know, kind of walk around in the daytime.
Right. Cause I remember what you guys had to like, jump over some fence or some railings or anything to get down to the actual, waterfall down in the punch bowl.
Yeah. We didn't really research how to get down to the place. We just kind of showed up and saw a set of stairs, and the set of stairs that we walked down was like a path that like takes you around the top of it. It doesn't actually take you into it. So we saw like a little hole in the fence. So we climbed down there thinking that, you know, okay, maybe, you know, this, we're not actually supposed to go down to the bottom. So we climbed out through this hole and went down, and the only way down was to pretty much jump off of this waterfall, but the water at the bottom wasn't deep. And we don't include much of that in the episode, but I actually do say at one point that if it was, you know, if it was deeper, I would just say we jump for it.
That would have made,
none of my team members were really for that. But, and then if, you know, if we would have had like, you know, ropes or, you know, our climbing gear with us, we probably, you know, would have just rappelled. So we were like, okay, well, this is taking up too much time. We have to see if there's another way down. And we sent our sound guy up to see if he could find anything. And he was able to find the right set of stairs to get down. So that's why in the portion of the episode, I turn to the camera and say, these are the right stairs. It's because we pretty much screwed around for about an hour trying to figure out how to get down.
It's my personal motto. And I don't know if there's anyone else who lives like this, but it's my personal motto. When given a chance, you always jump off a waterfall.
Yeah, I would have done it.
you jump first, and then you think about what you're going to land in after the fact. And you might only jump once, but it's going to be a great time.
Yeah. Yeah, because there was a part where it wasn't really documented very well, but I was actually like sitting on the edge of like the lowest part I could get down, and I was just like tossing rocks and trying to see if like I could get an estimate on how deep it was. But then when we actually like got down and were able to walk up to it, it was, you know, it was maybe like knee deep. So it wouldn't have been anything we would have been able to safely jump into.
It reminds me of those old Looney Tune cartoons where like the magician has got to do something. So like for his last trick, he puts like dynamite in his mouth and everyone's like, that was the best trick ever. He's like, it was, but sadly I can only do it once.
Yeah.
Now the Devil's Punch Bowl is more of a local legend, not really anything to do with ghosts or cryptids directly. The gnomes factor into it, but it's not all about the gnomes, I'd say. But you guys have also looked into, you and your crew have looked into Pepe, the like Pepin monster, right?
Yeah, I think it was 2014 is when we shot our thing out there. It was about a year in the making to do that. That was another example of poor execution on our part, where we had probably 3 or 4 interviews set up that day to shoot, and they all were, they all pretty much canceled last minute, and so that's why that episode. So ended up being what it was, where it was just, there was no real investigation, and nighttime investigation, and it was more of just us kind of walking around and talking. And but it's our most watched episode, and we still get, praised when people talk about it, because we put so much information into it, and we had our potential sighting, and we were actually as we were filming that episode, we had a reporter from the Minnesota Star Tribune following us around the whole time as we were doing this investigation and episode. So they were actually on the boat with us when we had our sighting initially. But yeah, that was a fun one. That's always been, we've always talked about like doing it again and like doing more extreme. But yeah, the Pepe one's pretty crazy. I've gone out to Lake City quite a bit, and just kind of walked the shoreline and talking to people, and yeah, it's definitely a close one for me.
It surprises me, for those like not in the Midwest, specifically, Minnesota and Wisconsin, because that's where Lake Pepin runs directly along the border. But how many people don't know or have never heard of Pepe before? The sightings and the history of it are almost relatable to that of Champ and Ogopogo, and not as like hundreds and hundreds, like Loch Ness and stuff, but for a large body of water to have as many sightings as this body of water does, I'm very surprised that not many people have heard of it.
Yeah, because when I had came across it, because I was researching just lake monsters in the whole, and I found a Wikipedia list that was just all of the known lake monsters within the U.S. and to Canada. And I saw it, and I was like, really? Like, I had never heard of this. So I started doing some research into it, and I'm like, holy crap. Like, there's actually a lot of, there's a lot of sightings, and there's a lot of history to it. I think it was that weekend, I was hanging out with my cousin. I'm like, let's go out there. Like, I want to check this place out. So it's about a little over an hour drive for me to get out to Lake City. And yeah, we got out there, and we just kind of started walking around and talking to people. And I was shocked, because to actually find people that were willing to talk about it. And I was also surprised that there wasn't a giant statue for it somewhere, like you find in most places that have a, decent cryptid presence to it.
I believe they have one of those state historical signs, like along the side of the road or somewhere, but it's just a little blurb.
Yeah, they really don't broadcast it as much as they could. They don't advertise it enough for it to really, I think they've just kind of, they've just kind of learned to live with it. And there's a it's in right downtown Lake City that actually sells like Pepe merchandise, but that's really all it is in terms of like capitalism for this creature. Is this, a few shirts and some stuffed animals they sell.
Right. So what would you do then if you got the interviewees lined up, you got all the background information for an investigation, you got all of that taken care of, you go out there to do the investigation, and say you do run into Pepe? What would you do at that point? Like, face-to-face, you're in the water. What would you do next?
Hope. I don't know. I guess it's one of those things, you kind of, I feel like you could ask that question to anybody that really does this, and I don't really think they would, any seasoned monster hunter, I feel like if you asked them, what would you do if you finally, found what you've been looking for? I don't even know if they would really have an answer. It's kind of one of those things where it's all fun and games until you're face-to-face with it.
Like a mouthful of teeth comes up out of nowhere in the lake.
Yeah, exactly.
And what can you do except just kind of hope that it, only goes for your leg or something.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just, hope that nothing goes wrong.
Yeah, oh man, that'd be something. What would you rather come face to face with? Something in the woods or something in the water?
Probably something in the woods, because at least I can run.
Yeah, true. What if it could fly?
All
Then you're just open
right, then.
to. There's so many scenarios when it comes to cryptids. It's just, you're just screwed. Any way you look at it, you're just screwed. So, one thing that I'm curious, and I ask it to a lot of people, but I've never actually recorded it, and I don't know why, but in this community, in this field, whatever you want to call it, one of the biggest hot issues that can divide people immediately. It doesn't matter if you're talking about Sasquatch-like creatures. It doesn't matter if you're talking about, lake monsters, anything like that, thunderbirds, whatever. There's always that kill or no kill debate. As an investigator and a researcher and someone who actively goes out and looks for these things, where do you stand on that issue when it comes to cryptids in a kill or no kill debate?
The way I see it is, I guess it comes down to if are you th is your life threatened by coming in the encounter with one of these things? If it's not, then I'd say let it be. If it's it has the power to rip your arms off and beat you to death with them, then yeah, you should probably try and shoot back if
Right.
you have something.
Like
But yeah, I guess it comes down to survival. If you yeah, like I said, if it's coming at you to kill you and you have the means to defend yourself, you might as well try.
the way I look
But
at
if you just kind of stumble across a family of Sasquatch in the woods and they're not doing any harm, then just leave them be.
the way I look at it as we're living in such an age where digital effects are so good, and there's so many talented people out there that any video or photo or any sound evidence, anything, no one's gonna believe it when it comes to this stuff. Everyone's instantly gonna cry hoax. Like
Yeah.
you could have something walk directly up to your camera where you can see, the mucus in its nose, you can see like the discoloration in the teeth, something like that, and someone's gonna cry false. My opinion of it, and I've gotten flack for it before, all you need is one body. That's it. The minute you have one body, science will, okay, yes, this is real. Now we can do something to study it. We can do something to learn about it. We can do something to protect it. Until we have one body, though, I don't think it's ever going to be like a fully respected field. That's just my way of thinking of it, though.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, you have to look into like other circumstances where, they have found bodies of things and the government just kind of swoops in and takes it. In terms of, Roswell or any other, extraterrestrial encounter, or, even if you want to look into the story of like giants and stuff where, they're apparently 9-foot skeletons were found and the Smithsonian came in to investigate and they pretty much took them and locked these skeletons away, apparently.
Oh yeah,
It's kind
there's a lot of legends up in the Midwest about 9-foot red-haired giants with 2 rows of teeth and being found in the ancient burial mounds.
I don't know, it's kind of one of those things where I guess it's if you get it into the right hands before it gets into the wrong hands, then yeah, there's probably potential that it can get studied. But I think the one body kind of theory could go one of two ways. It's either yeah, a proper scientist gets a hold gets gets to it and can study it properly, or Big Brother shows up and locks it away and tells you to be quiet.
Do you think that plays differently between hairy hominids and aquatic monsters? Would someone look at a lake serpent differently than they would a Sasquatch?
I think so. I think it's just because obviously the oceans are so unexplored that, who really knows? I guess if it's, and there have been, plenty of cases where something weird has washed up on shore. Obviously, there have been a lot of recent ones that have been obvious fakes, but there have been ones that, it's like, okay, let's take a step back. What the hell are we looking at? And I think, yeah, if you can get a proper sample that hasn't been too degraded and decayed, you have something. And then obviously with Sasquatch, you're basically hunting the predator. So it's like it's taller and faster and stronger than you. You're in trees, you're screwed.
Now, speaking of this, I think it brings up two stories. You're probably aware of them. If not, you've probably heard of them in some way, just not by like the same name, because that always seems to be a big thing in this field. Is you'll hear the exact same story, but depending on who you talk to, they change the name around to make it more dramatic or to make it fit into what kind of monster they are. But the whole body issue, you've heard the Mount St. Helens Bigfoot bodies, right?
Yep.
What do you think of that? Do you think that has any truth to it? Do you think it's just one of them catfish stories in the world of cryptozoology where it's like, you know, the fish was this big and it got away though? Like these are the bodies that supposedly there was a bunch of them, but they're all gone.
See, that just kind of goes back to what I said a little bit ago, where it's, you know, it people find these, you know, and they call the authorities and be like, yo, I found this. And then, you know, somehow word gets to the feds and then it just turns into a mess. I don't know. Like, I've heard, you know, like I've heard bits and pieces of these stories, and I haven't really like thoroughly investigated and, you know, and done any research into these. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's crazy. It's, where did these bodies go? Were there bodies to begin with? You know.
See, I've mostly heard the main story. You know, Mount St. Helens erupted, like Black Hawk helicopters were flying in, removing these 7-8 foot tall Bigfoot bodies. But then I've also heard another part of the story where I believe it was like an army search and rescue team, someone who was on the team, or what they say was on the team. This is where you start getting to the, you know, the tinfoil hat realm where you have no idea if there's any truth to it. But a member of like the army search and rescue team said that they were tasked with finding live Sasquatch and actually helping them with their injuries and stuff before they were carted off to a different part, you know, of Washington to run free through the woods and make a new home and stuff. It's just there's parts to it that, like, the eruption part and, you know, people coming across bodies, that part I can kind of believe. But then when you start getting into the other stuff with like the more conspiracy side of it, then it starts getting hard for me to believe. But it's just like maybe there's just that little piece that's true, but it's just, it was made to be so bizarre that people would naturally think that it's fake. It's just such a crazy thing when you start getting down that cryptid rabbit hole.
Yeah, there's a lot of pretty much hoax stories and, you know, potentially true stories, you know, seem to like to go hand in hand sometimes. There's a lot of, you know, it's telling stories about this stuff, it pretty much turns into a big game of telephone. And then, you know, you get the people that actually do have firsthand encounters, but it's just they're in such shock of what they've just encountered that they don't get don't get their own facts right. And
right, it's when you're looking for facts in this Fortean world, you got to be so exclusive on who you talk to make sure that you're actually talking to someone honest. It's just,
yeah, it's tough.
The minute you take a known hoaxer or someone who's just doing it to pull up a joke or a profit, whatever, the minute you take that person's statement as fact, your reputation is done. It's so hard to recover after that you have to screen the people you're going to interview, or when you're out on an active investigation, who you're talking to for their story. It's like you got to be so thorough before you record anything, any hint of I think there's something fishy going on. It's like it's best to just be done with it.
Yeah, for sure.
So speaking of that, when you go out investigating, how do you find people to talk to?
It's more so we just kind of, you know, we look into who has kind of talked about these things the most. And, you know, with the Devil's Punch Bowl one, we, you know, originally reached out to Chad Lewis, who was a good friend of mine, and he was unable to do it. So, you know, he said, recommended me to somebody, and I went to them, and they were unable to do it, and they recommended somebody to me, and they were unable to do it. And then we ended up, you know, settling on Chris Wiener, who we ended up talking to, who I've known for a number of years and is a, you know, a very good investigator and solid investigator and researcher, and really knows his stuff when it comes to a lot of, you know, stuff like this. And we, you know, really lucked out getting him. And then with like our Ireland one, it, you know, it was pretty much finding somebody that, you know, We emailed a few different folklorists in Ireland and were like, hey, this is what we're looking for. Do you know anything about it, or do you know somebody that does? And, we had pretty much two people recommend the person we did end up interviewing. So we're like, okay, then that's who we need to talk to. But yeah, it's we've ended up with people that we've, really wanted to talk to, and we've had to settle, and we've, been able to get people that we actually wanted to get. And it's just kind of comes down to planning and people willing to give us the time to talk to us about it.
Do you ever get recommended someone where you say you go into a town and, example, hey, we're here doing an investigation on a Thunderbird. We're looking for people to talk. Someone recommends you to go to John Bob's house down the road. He saw one. And then you get there and you ask this person, they're like, I don't want to talk about it. This is something I didn't enjoy when I saw it. I don't want to think about it again. I don't want anything to do with it. You ever had any of those?
No, we've never had anything like that. We definitely had times where we've, asked the question, hey, do you know anybody that has, had any encounters? And we've, lucked out a few times where we've actually had the person we've asked that question that's like, yeah, I have had an encounter, and they've talked to us. But we've definitely had, the times where the people are really, they're comfortable enough talking to us about it, but they don't want to do it on camera. Which it sucks, but it's like, okay, at least at least we are still hearing their story.
Right,
But it sucks that we can't, include it and share it to the world. I think some people it's like a rapport thing. It's they don't want to ruin their integrity around the community by saying that they've seen something that they couldn't explain. It just, it kind of sucks sometimes. I'm seeing it less and less, these days. Versus, probably 4 or 5 years ago, there are definitely a lot more people that are willing to talk about these things now that I think that they're seeing that other people are coming out as well and telling their stories. But it's still hit or miss on who you're gonna get.
Yeah, because it seemed like, in the heyday of cryptozoology and field research and UFOs and all of that, really, the heydays of it in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, everyone was wanting to talk. Everyone's like, yeah, I saw something. I'll give my report. I'll give my report. But then suddenly, people stopped talking. They clammed up. They didn't want anything to do with it. But it seems like there's a bit of a resurgence now due to, reality TV where people want to be on camera. They want to talk. It's still, various parts of the country and around the world, people are still, they don't want their face associated with it, but they are more willing to talk.
And see what I found, especially when we were over in Ireland, is they're a lot more open to this stuff than we are here. It's you really couldn't go anywhere and not talk about what we were over there filming about and have not have somebody be, know about it. It was kind of crazy to think that, you have, to be in a country where, has a belief system like that where everybody kind of believes in like the, some shape or form of this, kind of the cryptid or like the fairy realm, and then you come here and it's still pretty taboo.
Now, I don't know if you mentioned it, what you were over there looking for. You might have. It might have got cut off, but I don't remember hearing it. Were you looking for the fairy side, or were you looking on the cryptid side?
Well, over there, it's kind of everything kind of runs hand in hand.
Right. I've heard that before.
It's
Everything is somehow tied back to the fairy realm.
We were looking for what's called the Pooka, which is very much connected in with the fairy realm of things. It's basically like a goblin-like creature. It's known to be like a shapeshifter and can be rather mischievous, and it's very prominent around Halloween. And so that's kind of when we were there. And the lady that we talked to, Helena Byrne, had a lot to say about it, and that it is more, it really is hand in hand with the fairy realm of things, and it is something a lot of like the stories that she's been told over the years about people's encounters. It comes on as one of those things where it's like, what I always talk about, like the cultural aspect of things, where it's almost becomes like the boogeyman, where it's like, oh, don't do this because of this kind of the thing.
Right.
And that's kind of what a lot of like the stories, and even she said that when she was growing up in Ireland, like her like grandparents would say, oh, don't do this because the Pooka will, come after you. It was a really cool experience to be somewhere where that is the style of stories that you get. Or it's, we're here, it's a lot of it, you hear people that see Bigfoot, and you hear people that see like the lake monsters, and such, but there's no real like, oh, don't do this because, otherwise the Bigfoot will come out of the woods and get you. There's none of that. So it was just a really crazy experience to see it, to research a cryptid on a really strong cultural aspect where there is that style of storytelling.
When you were there and you were researching this, like you just said, they had the old stories of don't do this or, the puka will come out and stuff like that. But did you hear of any people talking about like, oh yeah, if you want to summon it or you want to bring it near, do this stuff and it'll come to you. Did you hear anything like that?
See, we asked Helena when we were interviewing her, and she, I'm sorry, Helena is her name. You always get that wrong.
I do the same thing. I always say it the exact same way, and then I'm like, no, I know that's not right.
But yeah, I had asked her that question, like, what should we do? And she really didn't have like a specific answer. It wasn't like one of those things where it's, oh, get this and leave as an offering. And she pretty much told us it will show itself if it wants to. And she told us an area of the country to go and look, and that's where we did our investigation. We had some interesting experiences, nothing that was really unexplainable, but it's, one of those stories where it's most likely more folkloric than it is anything physical, but it was still an interesting experience and it was still a fun story to tell, and we had a lot of fun doing it.
Nice. I've always wanted to go. I've always wanted to go to Ireland specifically for those reasons. Just the mythology and folklore there about all these things is that have lasted for hundreds of years. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was an awesome trip. Definitely something I never, anticipated when I created this show that, we would eventually someday be actually, in another country filming.
Now, when you were there, did you come across anything about the King Otter or the Dobberchow? Dabberchu.
We did not.
That's always been an interesting one. Do you know anything about it?
I do not.
The Dabberchu, and to anyone who's listening who speaks Irish Gaelic, I'm sorry. I tried to learn proper Irish language once before and I failed miserably, so I'm pronouncing this the Midwest way. The Dabberchu. What it is also known as the King Otter, and it's a creature from Irish folklore. It resembles both a dog and an otter. Sometimes it's described as a half dog or a half fish. It's essentially a pretty vicious cryptid. It attacked someone in the 17th century. That there was a pretty big battle to kill it that was in this lake. But yeah, they say they killed it, but there's a few more of them. But essentially, it's just a big dog otter, kind of like. Oh, I'm drawing a blank. It's in New Zealand. It's a spotted otter, but they don't have otters there. But kind of like its Irish cousin, except just extremely, extremely mean. Supposed to live in
Interesting.
lakes and rivers, and yeah, its fur has protective properties. If you can kill it, you get like a cloak. You can make a cloak out of it that can protect you from. I don't really know what it protects you from, but there's your excuse to go back. You can look for
Yeah,
that
there we
guy.
go.
So what is Back to coming stateside again. What are your favorite legends, folk tales, stories?
I don't know. I've always kind of been pretty open to everything. I think the one that I'm, the one on the one cryptid on our list that I've been, obsessed with for years, that, if we ever get the opportunity to make an episode on it, I'm gonna jump at it hardcore. I've always been really into like the Tasmanian tiger sightings.
Oh, yeah, the thylacines.
Yeah, that's one that's really been on our list for a while. Other than that, it's, pretty much been the usual stuff. We've got a pretty extensive list of episode topics that we'd like to do someday if we ever get the funding or interest. And yeah, in terms of stateside ones, I'm trying to think.
I have to say, I really respect your answer on that because. When people are talking about like the cryptids they want to look into or find or what discover, usually they go for the big top five of cryptids, like Nessie, Bigfoot, Mothman, stuff like that. But rarely do people go to actual grounded, real life cryptids. So it's refreshing to hear someone say a thylacine because I'm definitely on that side where I fully believe it still exists.
Yeah,
It has to.
it's yeah. Just the, there's been some pretty interesting sightings out there, and yeah, it's the, obviously it's kind of goes hand in hand with the, with most cryptid sightings where for some reason all the people that videotape these things don't have a decent camera. But I think I've seen some pretty interesting, some pretty compelling video footage out there and some photos, and we've been researching a lot of sightings and stories, and I feel like they could definitely be out there. It's especially given that there's been sightings on mainland Australia, which obviously is a huge body of land that could
Oh
easily
yeah,
hide stuff like this.
because what do they say? I believe it's and I know my numbers aren't accurate here, but I did an article on something from Australia at one point, and I believe they said the actual populated habitable zone of Australia is only like 20%. Like 80% of it falls into uninhabitable for humans. So you just have these scant little homesteads out there, but for the vast majority, anything could be out there. It's crazy.
Most of the population in Australia is along the coast, and then obviously you do have a few inland towns here and there, but yeah, there's so much open space that that these things could easily hide in. But then going to Tasmania as well, there it's a pretty dense island. It's very mountainous and it's very forested, and from what I've seen picture wise and just reading about people's encounters there, it's a pretty densely forested area that these actual thylacines that somehow survived the extinction could have hidden away and could still be living undetected.
I think one of my favorite stories about the thylacine, which pretty much solidified my belief that they're still alive, is there was that group of women. I can't remember what they were called, but they made it their job and their mission to smuggle out as many living thylacines as they could, and transport them to a different part of Australia, to New Zealand, or not New Zealand. The surrounding islands, just to save them and keep them from going extinct. So just knowing that there is these real life thylacine smuggling groups, it just gives me hope that they had to have saved something. If they were doing this under the cover of darkness, you can't tell me that they went completely extinct.
I mean, we're seeing, especially now, there are animals that have thought to have been long extinct that we're now finding, actually fairly recently, just, with the advancements in technology and a lot of national parks and stuff around the world putting, game live feed game cameras out on so you can, watch the wildlife from the comfort of your home, and people starting to see animals that they've never seen before, and then finding out that, oh, this was supposed to be extinct.
And just think of how many people have actually seen one, have been watching those cameras just to kill some time, and they saw something they didn't recognize, but they figured, oh, it's just an animal, and they did nothing about it. That nothing about it stood out to them, so they didn't report it. But you could have had Joe Schmo from Wyoming watching, a live feed of the Everglades, and they saw a skunk ape walk by. They didn't do anything about it. They just accepted it as, oh, that's probably something native there. Like it's crazy because to think, so many people will say we live in a world now where we're connected all the time, everything's being filmed, nothing can hide. But that's only applicable if people actually pay attention. And that's our problem as a species, is we don't pay attention.
The idea that everything's been discovered and there's, nothing left to find is just, it's naive and it's idiotic. There's new species being discovered every day. Like it's, even today, it's in 2018, we're still finding new animals and new species on this planet.
They just rediscovered that Zanzibar leopard. Everyone swore it was extinct and put up a game camera and boom, there it goes. It walked right by it. It's just got to get lucky, right place, right time. Listen to local peoples as they say this is what we're seeing and just kind of hope. That's all you can do. Just keep pushing at it. Which is why I really respect shows like yours and these. I have a tag on Instagram and Twitter I use sometime, and it really means a lot because the community of it is so passionate, but it's, support indie cryptozoology. This little indie market that people have is so passionate that if any like big discoveries are going to be made, it's from these, you know, small independent guerrilla groups who go out and just decide to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And I hope, you know, in my life at some point, one of these, you know, major ones are discovered. Not exactly, you know, like saying Bigfoot, but something that like fills in that gap. Like, oh, this is what people have been seeing. Or, you know, they find a lake monster. It's like, okay, we're on to something now.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's why to me, like, the, you know, the cultural aspect of like cryptids is so interesting to me, because it's, you know, like, I've researched a lot of like, you know, African myths and legends and stuff like that, and that's where like a lot of it is. It's they paint pictures of these things that they're seeing, and they tell story, you know, tell stories around the fire of these things that they're seeing, and they, you know, warn people, you know, oh, don't go in this area, because, you know, that's where it lives, and it's, you know, it gets to the point where it's like you have to start kind of taking this stuff, you know, as possible fact, because these indigenous people know what's around them, and they, you know, and if they're telling you, hey, there's something that's different out there, you should probably take warning and, you know, consider the fact that, you know, it could be something, you know, unexplainable and, you know, cryptid-esque, and could easily be something very different, you know. And it's just like the Destination Truth episode where they're in Sumatra and they're talking to the, you know, the people there that are working for National Geographic, and the one lady's like, you know, I've been here 30 years and I've only seen an elephant twice. You know, these areas are so thick, and the idea that, you know, you can just walk into these jungles and see everything around you is just preposterous. It's, you know, you never know what could be watching you as you're walking through these places.
I can't remember what I was watching at one point, but there was some show where they went into, you know, the jungles of Africa up in the Congo region. And yeah, it was so thick you couldn't see your hand, not your hand, like someone standing 5 feet in front of you, was that thick. And lo and behold, out of nowhere, an elephant came through. Mm-hmm. A full-size elephant, completely hidden. No one knew it was there. And the people who were filming it were caught so off guard. And it's like, you want to tell me that, back to the thylacine, something that doesn't stand any higher than, you know, like full-grown wheat, you're going to tell me that that is 100% gone.
Yep.
These things are so adept to blending in with their surroundings and making sure people don't find them, that it's like, there's always that truth factor behind it, that until we bulldoze flat every piece of earth on this planet, there's always that chance something's out there.
That's kind of why, you know, the thylacine's always been at the top of my list for that reason specifically, is, you know, they've, you know, if people have been seeing them almost as long as, you know, they've been reportedly extinct, then they're probably not extinct. They're, you know, they're a fairly small animal that knows how to hide.
And it was crazy too, because they were completely wiped out for just a bullshit reason, because they originally thought that they were the ones decimating the livestock population. So they kill them all, and then come to find out after studying them, their jaws weren't powerful enough to kill the livestock. It was more than likely the wild dogs. So people wiped out this species, quote unquote, wiped out this species over a crappy reason. And then, when we could have saved the species from what was left in the zoo, the last remaining one was killed because the dude forgot to put it back in its cage at night and it froze to death. It's so irritating when you hear that. It's like people wipe out a species to the point of almost extinction, other people step in, and then it's just destroyed by stupidity.
Yeah.
It happened to the ivory-billed woodpecker. It's
the people that are trying to like genetically clone them. You know, their main reasonings behind it are, you know, well, we did this to them. It's, you know, we should at least, you know, lend a hand to, you know, bringing them back.
And I agree with that, because they weren't chosen, you know, by the planet to be removed. We forced them into extinction. So, yeah, it's only fair that we let them come back. I also believe that with the woolly mammoth. I can't speak for our, our mammoth hunter ancestors, but damn it, I want to see a mammoth. have you looked into those stories of surviving mammoths in Alaska?
Yeah, I've seen. I've uh, I've come across some stories, and there was the one reported sighting a few years ago in Russia that a lot of people were skeptical on just because of the graininess of the video. But
Yeah, I believe that was reported to be
yeah,
a grizzly
I
bear.
think stuff like I think that's kind of what it was, what people ended up saying. It most probably was a bear with a fish in its mouth.
Right. There was a story that I read, which I love, and one of these old verbal stories that were written down, which lends a little bit of credence to it because it's not someone modern looking for attention. But that dude in Alaska who he was talking to the native peoples, and they were in their camp, they had some like giant mammoth looking tusks, and he was looking at them, and they had fresh like cut marks on the tusk, and he was asking about them, like, where did you get this? And they said that, off this way, there's a herd of them. So they went off looking for him. The guy went off and he reported that he got charged by, a big furry elephant that the tribe had to kill, or else it was gonna, kill them. So they had to kill it, and they ate it, and they butchered it, and there was its bones. So
And in Alaska isn't, it's another one of those places where it hasn't really been as, explored as it could be. And obviously, there are people that live way out there that, these things could easily avoid.
I'm going to quote the famous X-Files line, I want to believe. It's hard for me at times,
Right.
but I want to.
Yeah.
So, kind of falling into a rant on extinct animals and how I want them to be back. So, I'm going to bring it back around to a legend, not about a cryptid, but I know a famous Wisconsin legend. I don't know if it's in Minnesota, or I don't know if you have something like it. But have you ever heard of the legend of Haunchyville?
I have not.
I think this would make for a good episode, but you could also get arrested. So it's kind of up to you. I'm just throwing it out there, but I'm not going to take responsibility if someone gets arrested. So anyone listening to this, you're doing this on your own will if you want to do this. So what it is, there's a legend in Wisconsin about Haunchyville, and it's said to be an entire, not city, but an entire town made up entirely of little people. Because P.T. Barnum and the Ringling Brothers Circus was located here in Baraboo, was the stopping grounds. It's said that there was a bunch of little people who were angry, so they revolted and they left and they fled into the cornfields of Wisconsin, and they set up their own little town. Like, they have houses that are only like 3, 4 feet high, just a creepy place that they set up, and it's guarded by some like watch keeper who has a farm around the area, who it's been like in the family for generations, there to watch and protect Haunchyville. It's supposed to be in the woods near Muskego, which is only 20 minutes away from Milwaukee, off of a road called Mystic Drive. People swear that out that way, you're going to find little houses. You're going to hear like a shotgun click of someone shooting into the air if you're getting too close. The people standing in the cornfield looking at you, just angry little people who want to keep you away from their town. I think you should find it.
I'm gonna look into that.
I got one more thing for you. I don't know if you've heard of it. Probably. This is from your neck of the woods. So what I did is I grabbed one of my books. This one I grabbed was The Encyclopedia of Cryptozoology by Michael Newton. And I just looked up Minnesota. And what I came across was the Minnesota River Monster. Have you ever heard of it?
I have not.
This one, it's just a little tiny paragraph. There's not much to it, but it says, and I don't even know where the Minnesota River is. Is it kind of like the Mississippi? Is it an offshoot of the Mississippi? Do you know?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I think it's in the northern part of the state.
Here it
Yeah, I think it
says,
is. I think it is a bit of an offshoot from Mississippi.
yeah, because it says it's, you pass by Minneapolis, you can pass by Minneapolis off of it, but I don't have any recollection of where Minneapolis is exactly located in Minnesota. But what it says is, sometime in the late 19th century, a 12-foot snake was reportedly pulled from the Minnesota River by crewmen aboard a barge passing the Minneapolis suburb of Eden Prairie. As soon as the snake was placed on deck, it allegedly opened its mouth and disgorged a dozen smaller snakes. The reptile's fate is not recorded, and its species is unknown. No snake of that size is known to live in North America. So apparently, they found a 12-foot snake in the Minnesota River that puked up smaller snakes.
Sounds like Tremors.
Right? The graboids.
They can swim now. They can swim now.
Can they really?
I don't know. There's your sequel.
I was going to say.
There's your Tremors 7.
I was going to say, there's been like 6 of them. I stopped watching after they could start flying.
Yeah, well, I watched the new one.
Yeah, this says it was recorded in 1904. So there might be a one of them little legends that someone might know. Who knows?
Just threw up little snakes.
Yeah, just big old snake threw up a bunch of little snakes, and then it was to the point of, yeah, we're just not going to record this story anymore.
It's like everyone's worst nightmare.
Right? It's like, give me more. What happened to the little snakes? Did they puke up smaller snakes, and then everyone was just covered
in
snakes?
It was just a never-ending... Every snake that came out was threw up an equally smaller snake.
All 12. So one puked up 12. Those 12 puked up 12 smaller ones. So on and so on. And legend has it, it's still happening to this day.
It's just a never-ending loop of snakes throwing up each other.
Oh, man. That'd be awful. So, I got, another question for you. So you go out there, you know, daytime, nighttime, you have a crew with you and stuff like that. What kind of equipment are you bringing with you?
Years ago, it was when we first kind of started out, it was pretty minimalistic. We pretty much used what we could get our hands on and kind of what we had. Now we've, you know, accumulated more equipment where we, you know, we actually do have a full-fledged, you know, sound bag with a, you know, audio mixer in it and, you know, wireless mics and shotgun mics, and do have, you know, proper, you know, nice HD cameras to film everything with. And so our gear has definitely come a long way from what we used to have. But yeah, we try to make it a full-fledged production and definitely aim for quality.
So what is your crew size then?
It ranges anywhere from 4 to 5 people usually. Normally 5 on a good day, 4 if we have to.
Does everyone play like the investigator role? Everyone helps out, or is there just people there, you know, to film or record audio or?
That's kind of the one little thing that we stole from Destination Truth is, you know, everybody on the crew has their specific roles, but everybody is allowed to, you know, have a say, and everyone kind of ends up on camera one way or another, and everyone kind of, you know, aids in the investigations and the research.
I like that when everyone's like fully involved. It's always nice to get a bunch of different perspectives on what's going on.
Yeah, because like, you know, when we, you know, with the Devil's SpongeBob episode, we had the little bit where, you know, it was, you know, at least it was myself and the two other people, members of my crew, that I was talking with. It wasn't the whole crew, but I was, you know, getting their kind of, you know, input on and their take on what they, you know, thought about the, you know, the story as a whole. And that's definitely something that people seem to enjoy, is, you know, getting everyone's input, so that way it's not just mine. And it just kind of, you know, it broadens it out a little bit.
Nice. Now, you spoke at Paracon, right?
Yes.
How did that go?
It was great. The crowd was great. There's a lot more people showed up than I thought thought there would be, to my thing specifically. Yeah, met some cool people, and a lot of people seemed really interested in what I had to say and what I was working on. And yeah, no, definitely go back next year if they'll have me.
What'd you speak about?
Just the show in general, and kind of everything that we have done and what we want to do, and just my kind of, you know, my personal history in the field.
Nice. Well, is there anything specifically you want to mention or talk about or put out there or anything at all?
I'm not sure really when our next, you know, episode will be, as I'm, you know, I have taken on some other responsibilities as of recently. Definitely, you know, going to try and get something, you know, another thing made here at some point in the next year or so. Going to keep plugging away at the Ireland episode and get that out at some point here, and so that way people can see what we did, and it's pretty much all I really have.
Are you the editor on those as well?
Yeah. Yeah, so I wear a lot of hats.
I was going to say, it's definitely a big responsibility. I did video editing in college, and it's not my forte. I'm not detailed enough for video editing.
Yeah, I pretty much, you know, I plan and research everything, I write everything and coordinate everything and edit everything with, you know, the occasional help from members of the crew, but yeah.
Well, before we start wrapping it up, because it's coming up on 1 hour and 20 minutes now, one quick question, just off the top of your head, like don't stop and think about it, just first answers. Which cryptid do you think is 100% true, and which one do you think is 100% false?
All right. Thylacine true. Goes back to our whole rant. Fake.
Fake's one is always a hard one for people.
I don't know, it's a tough one. 'Cause I mean, 'cause you know, really any of these could, you know, end up being fake. I don't know.
I'm gonna piss people off and I'm gonna say Bigfoot.
Really?
Bigfoot's not real, people.
Like which one or all of them as a whole?
See, that's where I like that you asked that question. The popular Bigfoot, I don't believe is real.
Like
The
the Bluff Creek one?
10 foot tall, you know, man-like Bigfoot who can telepathically communicate and phase in and out and stuff like that. The modern woo Bigfoot, not real. But like the Orang Pendek, you know, skunk apes, stuff like that, the Texas Big Thicket monsters, I think those are more real. The pop culture Bigfoot, though, not real.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on there. Because you know I have on the on our list we don't have you know the Bigfoot, we have you know we have the specifics, you know we have skunk ape, we have the Chinese year, and we have the Australian Yeti, the or not the Yeti, the Yowie, we have the Yeti, the Orang Pendek, what's the other ones,
Although there are so many,
I know
just
there's
a
so many different culture
ridiculous amount.
variations, yeah, those ones specifically.
Finding Bigfoot has ruined people's expectations on what Bigfoot or Sasquatch actually is.
Yeah, and finding Bigfoot didn't help.
Was gonna say that that sigh you had right there seems like you're you're not on the side of finding Bigfoot.
Well, you know, I always get asked by people like, you know, what do you know, have you guys gone out and searched for Bigfoot? And it's like, no. Like, I don't want to do the cliche Bigfoot. I want to do like the cool Bigfoots and the ones that aren't really being looked for in terms of, you know, at least to this, at least in terms of like what we're doing, where we're actually trying to like document, you know, our findings and stuff. Yeah, you know, it's Bigfoot groups have become what ghost hunting groups were back when like ghost hunters first came out, where it's just like everybody is trying to do it now and it's just getting so overdone.
I
And
completely agree. I love that comparison because it's totally true. And I hate the phrase,
yeah.
like needles on a chalkboard, I hate the phrase gone squatchin'. It drives me nuts.
I do too.
What are you doing today? Oh, we're going out squatchin'. All right, so you and your buddy are just going to go into the woods and just scream and yell as loud as you can and hope to bring in an elusive, like legit animal is going to come to your screams. It's like, no.
My God. Yeah,
You're gonna, oh.
I passed an SUV one time when I was driving, and it was just like, you know, the Bigfoot footprint stickers all over it, you know, huge decal on the back, you know, gone squatching and like this and that. I'm like, yeah, buddy, you're doing it right. It's
You
like,
do you have a bunch of fireworks in the back of that SUV too that you're gonna light off in the woods in hopes that it's gonna bring in a monster?
I never watched a full single episode of it of Finding Bigfoot. But there was one episode that I came across that I was just kind of flipping through channels and I saw it was on. I'm like, all right, I'll give this a, you know, a fifth go. And they set up a rave in the woods
I
to
that
try to
yes.
attract. And that was my, okay, I'm done with this show moment.
I know the exact one you're talking about. And for I didn't see the entire thing either. I tuned in. They were in the woods. There was like a disco ball going. There was a
Yeah, they had
loud
like
music going, like a little
they had, yeah,
laser
they had
light show.
lasers and stuff. Yeah.
Like that wouldn't even bring in a normal person because you're gonna see that in the middle of the woods going, those people are crazy. Like there's no good Lord, it's like, did you see any deer or raccoon or anything around there? No, because animals avoid that shit. See, this has got me to the point where I'm starting to swear.
Yeah,
Oh
because
man.
like the reasoning behind it was, like people report seeing, Sasquatch at these music festivals in the middle of the woods. It's like, no, they're probably high on acid or some shit and seeing things. Like
Exactly.
it's a music festival. There's drugs involved.
No one goes to a party in the woods sober.
No, exactly.
No one. Of course, every person saw Bigfoot that night because they all took from the same stash.
It's like, yeah, but you saw that dragon flying through the air as well.
Right? Oh man. While we're on it, I hate when people talk too. It's like, I leave Bigfoot gifts and he gives me gifts in return. It's like, what do you leave him? I leave him cans of peanut butter and he really likes Snickers bars. Any single animal in the woods is going to come across that and eat it.
Just don't take his beef jerky.
Right? He'll throw a boulder at you. The lo All logic goes out the windows when you're talking to people who go squatching. It really does. And like I was talking to Denver Michaels the last episode, I was telling him he got a good laugh out of it too. I thoroughly believe anyone who goes into the woods and is doing Bigfoot sound blasting calls, there's another group doing the exact same thing, and they're calling back to those people, and they each think they got evidence.
Oh my God, I never really like looked into that.
It
Yeah, I
oh man.
any of these like 100% specific Bigfoot groups, and I know some people, I'm decent friends with some people, I'm well acquainted with people that are in these groups. I do respect them as people,
Oh, of course. There's some legit people out there who have made me almost change my mind.
But then you have those groups that they're 100%, only look for Bigfoot, and then you watch some of their stuff, and it's like, you what are you trying to do here? Like, are you trying to find them, or are you trying to look insane in the woods? Like, it's
Exactly.
like all you're doing is just scaring shit away.
Yeah, it's insane, and it's like sometimes these, and I'm just gonna put a disclaimer out there before, I'm not attacking anyone particularly. I'm just saying the group as a whole, because the group, sadly, these larger groups, these squatching groups, have given actual researchers a very bad image, which I know a lot of these people are trying to break away from. But when you have these people who are out there saying, "I see Sasquatch every single weekend I go out," okay, where's your proof? Well, I feel I don't need proof because I talk to my forest friends. Get out of here. I don't want to talk to you anymore. I'm sorry, big if quote unquote Bigfoot exists, it's not magical, it's not a friend, it's not someone who you can communicate and exchange gifts with. If anything, it's a wild animal, kind of like a chimpanzee, where it can learn if taught. So if you're bringing things to the exact location every day, an animal's going to learn that routine and it's going to take it. It doesn't mean it's Bigfoot. Stop saying it's Bigfoot, people. But then you get the researchers who do very well, good research, and they bring up the facts like, how does native peoples in the early, like 1800s in America have this depiction of, a Sasquatch-like creature in this group of people in, say, the Congo region or China or Tibet, anywhere in there? Are describing almost nearly the same thing and they've never met before. That's when I start looking at it like, okay, now you're on to something here.
Yeah,
That's a little
exactly.
weird. I can't explain that, but I can completely explain that Bigfoot does not prefer Snickers bars over Milky Ways. That was an additional 10 minute
When
rant.
you really start like, when you really start researching these things like specifically as a whole, and don't and you get away from just going out to try and find something, then then you've really kind of turned, you can turn some heads that way, because you're actually showing that you're putting in the work to look into every possibility.
Yeah, it's
And you're
you.
not just going out into the woods to wander aimlessly and scream and beat trees and
They have what did I watch not too long ago? Someone did a video at like a Bigfoot festival. Some town was putting on a Bigfoot festival, and they had a squatch calling competition where they
Oh, that's
brought
it's in northern Minnesota.
it. Okay, so you know what I'm talking about, the squatch
Yeah, I don't
calling.
I it could be different, because I'm sure there probably are different, festivals doing this now, but yeah, I forget the name of the town. But there's a small town in northern Minnesota that claims to be like the Bigfoot capital of Minnesota, and they have a yearly Bigfoot festival, and yeah, they have like a calling contest, and
But what drives me nuts is, like, this video I saw, like, they started off with, like, we're going to bring up a Bigfoot expert and Sasquatch call, you know, extraordinaire. It's like, one, no such thing as a Bigfoot expert. There's no such thing as a lake serpent expert. There's no such thing as a Mothman expert. There's just not.
Nope.
Like, that's going to offend some people, but it's true. Until you have 100% proof, you can't be an expert in it. You could be a damn good researcher. You can't be an expert.
Oh, yeah.
And then to, like, list that as your actual job. I'm a professional Bigfoot hunter and Sasquatch call enthusiast. It's like, buddy, it's a glorified hobby. I'm sorry. As you can see, this
congratulations.
This upsets me.
Congratulations. You've managed to make somewhat of a decent living doing this.
Right, tell me your secret. That was... I'm glad the connection held for that.
I am too. That was good.
It was. Just think about it, though. Next time you go out in the woods and you hear off in the distance someone, like, going, ah, you know, like that, just think it's probably another dude, like, 2 miles away sound blasting.
Yeah. I'm going to say this because I'm going to have some people that listen to this that were with me on this trip. We did a Wisconsin Dogman investigation that somehow turned into a Bigfoot hunt. And there was actually a point in the show where we did a tree knock and I did, like, the call, but I actually, like, before I do it, I'm like, hey, if it works on finding Bigfoot, then I'll try it. And I did it. Like, it was totally, like, as a joke thing. Like, in no way, shape, or form was meant to be, like, a serious thing.
Did you get a call back?
The people that... No. Not a one.
Everyone must have been asleep at that time.
Before we even started, though, we heard some, like, three pretty solid hollow knocks come out of the forest. So that was probably the other people out there trying to find...
Were you out on Bray Road?
No. We were the southern unit of the Kettle Moraine.
Okay. Yeah, because I know the Kettle Moraine area there. It's a gorgeous place, so there's people there constantly.
And yeah, we were there in the middle of February.
More and more people are coming forward saying they're having strange experiences in the Kettle Moraine area. And I know a few researchers who are in that area, and a lot of the evidence they provide is very thought-provoking. Like, I will give it that. It really will make me stop and think for a minute. But because there's so many more people coming forward and saying that there's something going on in there, there's a significant amount of people going in there now to hoax it, to make a joke of it. So it's kind of like you got to take everything with a grain of salt now. You really do, because there's so many people out there trying to prove it, and there's double the amount of people out there trying to make a mockery of the people who are trying to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird time we live in right now for investigating. It really is.
Yeah, it's tough. It is. It's really tough. That's kind of why you have to, you have to be careful on who you tell you're doing these things. That way, you don't have the people that decide to sneak out there in the middle of the night and mess.
Oh, yeah. Like, walk through, carve your own Bigfoot feet. Or just walk through fresh snow with, your own footprints because people do it. People don't, like, send me messages saying people don't walk in the snow with their bare feet. You've never lived in the Midwest. Like, people do it.
Yeah. It's, you gotta run to your car quick and you don't want to put your shoes on. Like,
Exactly. And once you get a footprint in the snow, as soon as the sun hits it the next day, it's gonna get wider.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gonna look like a big footprint. Just accept it what it is. But, man, I could keep ranting about this for, like, another hour and a half. But I think we'll cut it at an hour and a half. We got a good conversation, and I think we did run into some technical problems. But if for some reason I can't get a lot of good audio out of it, we're just gonna have to do it again.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I'm completely fine with that if you are.
I am too. Like, I'm thinking in the back of my head, I'm like, let's just do a podcast together where we just rant about the field.
Right. We can call it finding the flaws in finding Bigfoot.
Like, there's our calling. We're just gonna the two of us just talking shit about people that just make a mockery of this field.
And like I said before, disclaimer. Everyone who I personally talk to, I hold them at the highest respect of their research. Like, I'm pretty good, and I feel a lot of people are, at like knowing the difference between a truly passionate person as opposed to someone who's just in it, you know, for the likes and all that crap. Yeah. You know the difference right away. So I like to think that everyone, you know, associated with, friends with, colleagues with, whatever you want to call yourself, I hold them at the highest standards of what they do. So I'm not talking about any of these people during this. When I say, the people I'm talking about, guarantee everyone has in their mind just that image of that person that you just drives you nuts when you think about the flaws in this field. But it's going to start again if I don't end it.
Yeah, I got to stop where we're at.
So do you have anything you want to plug? Twitters, Instagrams, websites, whatever. Now go for it. Anything you want.
Yeah, you can find Chase Legends. We have a website. It's chasinglegendscrew.com. We're on Instagram at chasinglegendsTV. Let's see what my Twitter is, because it's something weird.
I do the same thing. I can never remember mine.
Our Chasing Legends Twitter is, it's Chasing Legends and then an underscore at the end of it. My personal Twitter is just at Nash Hoover. My personal Instagram is Nash_Hoover. We're on Facebook at Chasing Legends TV as well. Our Facebook page is kind of where I post the most in terms of news and stuff. But yeah, that's kind of all of our, you can pretty much find all of our social links from either the website or the Facebook page.
Right. It's just all convenient one spot. I'm kind of the same way. Yeah. For plugs, I'm just, go to pinebarrensinstitute.com. From there, you can get my Twitter, Instagram, store, all that. All conveniently laid out. There you go. But
it's just easy.
Yeah, man, this was a very fun conversation. I didn't think that I felt like I was yelling after I said it. You know, in my mind, I was like, was I yelling? But I got close, and I was just kind of keeping it calm for the most part.
Yeah, that was good. I haven't, I've been on a few podcasts and stuff like this before, but most of them are like live and, you know, they have a schedule to keep and they have a format they have to stick to. So I like doing this pre-recorded stuff where you can just pretty much just let loose and do whatever.
Oh, for sure. Formats make things too stale, I found. It's like you're trying to make sure.
It's, you know, they have a set, you know, they have a script that they go off of. They have a set list of questions and they dissect everything that you're doing and, you know, pretty much ask you about everything. Or, you know, I like this format because it's just, there's just so much more that could come up that can make for good discussion. Like, obviously we just pulled out of thin air.
Right. One topic leads into another, which leads into another. And, you know, we start with, Pepe, and we somehow get into a 12-foot snake that pukes smaller snakes, which pukes smaller snakes, which pukes smaller snakes. Snakeus pucus infinitum. Infinitum. I don't know Latin.
It's a snakeception.
Yeah. These snakes won't stop puking snakes. Oh, man, that would be a nightmare.
I've had it with these motherfucking snakes puking other motherfucking snakes.
Right. Get them off my boat. And kick all the snakes into the river. Well, man, I'm gonna have to call it on this. I do have to say, though, see, I keep getting sucked back in. These pre-recorded ones, I find myself having to delete and edit out so many ums and because I don't know where my brain's going when I'm talking. So there's a lot of, oh, man, I just did a long
Yeah, I have the people same don't want to listen to that.
But I'll start getting into it again. But we're going to have to call it here because we're actually only 20 minutes away from 2 hours, which is a...
Jesus.
I know. It was a
very long, this is the longest one of these I've ever done.
And it was the funnest. That's what I'm going for, is the funnest.
It was.
But we're gonna have to definitely talk again about... And maybe next time I'll even write down topics which I want to rant about.
That'll be the next show we do together. It's not gonna be about anything specific. We're just gonna rant about our issues in the field.
See, I have a group of people that I want to get together, very passionate about what they do, with no qualifications at all, and just have everyone ranting and just record it. That's what
that'd
I
be awesome. That'd be so much fun.
I think it would be, and I'm gonna try and set that up. But everyone, definitely make sure to check out, Nash's stuff. Get in touch with him if you have any questions for what he does. Everyone in this field is very approachable and very easy to talk to. So if you have a question, don't be afraid to ask. Like, follow his stuff. Check out Chasing Legends on YouTube. Everything they're doing, everything he's doing, it's great stuff. Make sure to check out my stuff if you want. It's up to you. If you do, awesome. If not, I can't force you to do it. But you're here, so you might like it. I don't know. We're going to have to talk more on Instagram, Facebook, all that. Whenever I have a new topic to rant about, I'll send it your way to see what you think about it.
Awesome.
But yeah, this was a great conversation. I'm definitely going to have to do it again. And I'm as awful at ending these as I am at starting them. I don't know how to do it. So for everyone listening, I'm just going to say bye.
Was A Quiet Place inspired by signs that comes at night in War for the Planet of the Apes? Was Ready Player One influenced by Avatar, Wreck-It Ralph, and The Last Starfighter? Is The Hurricane Heist more influenced by Sharknado or Geostorm? These are the kinds of questions my guest co-hosts and I discuss on my podcast, Piecing It Together. Every week, we look at a new movie and try to figure out what other movies inspired it, whether it's the story, the character development, tone, or even use of music. Every movie was influenced by something that came before, and we want to figure out what. Check out Piecing It Together on your favorite podcast app or check us out on piecingpod.com. You can also follow us on social media @piecingpod. Piecing It Together is a part of the All Points West Podcast Network.